I recognized that if I picked out a very successful, a very prosperous, a very wealthy man and could work for him in close contact as a secretary, that I would appropriate all of his friends and much of his knowledge, and it would be worth a stupendous amount to me. I finally chose General Rufus A. Ayers of Virginia. He owned a railroad, a chain of banks, a chain of sawmills, a chain of coal mines. And in addition to that, he was a senior member of one of the most important law firms in the state of Virginia. And I made up my mind that General Ayers was going to have the great fortune of giving me my first job. And here is how I broke the news to him. I wrote him a letter and I said, "Dear General Ayers, I have just completed a secretarial course at Tazewell Business College, and I know you will be glad to hear that I have chosen you as my first employer," period and paragraph. "I am willing to go to work for you under the following conditions. I will work for the first 3 months and pay you a salary of any amount you name per month for that privilege, with the understanding that if at the end of those 3 months you wish to continue my services, you'll pay me that same salary. But meanwhile, you'll allow me to put on the cuff what I owe you, and you can take it out of what you owe me if you continue my services. Sincerely, Napoleon Hill." I guess that put him on the spot, didn't it? He didn't answer my letter. He called my father on the telephone. He said, "I want you to send that boy down. I want to look at him." He didn't say anything about employing me. I went down to this huge law office. He got up from his desk and he came around, walked all the way around me 3 or 4 times, never opened his mouth. And then he went back and sat down at his desk and he said, "I wish to ask you just one question. Did you write that letter yourself or did somebody tell you what to write?" I said, "General Ayers, I wrote that letter myself, and I meant every word of it." He said, "That's just what I thought after I looked you over. And you go to work tomorrow morning in the secretarial department at the regular beginning salary. A rather fabulous salary. At least fabulous in those days. $50 a month. But $50 then were $50. Now, $50 is not $50. It's something much less than that." Later on, when my brother and I matriculated at Georgetown University Law School intending to become lawyers, I looked around and made a contract with a magazine to write stories about successful men. Meanwhile, I had become a newspaper man, a cub reporter, and was fairly good at writing even then. Fortunately, I was assigned to Andrew Carnegie, the wealthiest man in the world at that time, and known throughout the world as being the best picker of men. That's how he became successful. He knew how to surround himself with mastermind allies that could do the things that he needed to have done. And nobody, please hear me on this, nobody ever rises above mediocrity who does not learn to use the brains of other people, and sometimes the money of other people, too. We call it OPM and OPB, other people's brains and other people's money. And it takes a combination of the two, believe you me. Well, Andrew Carnegie gave me 3 hours. And when the 3 hours were up, he said, "This interview is just starting. Come on over to the house and we'll take it up after dinner." And I was so glad that he said, "Come on over to the house." If he'd said, "Go over to the hotel and come back tomorrow morning," I'd have been broke because I had just about enough money in my pocket to pay my way back to Washington. After dinner, we went out into the library and he gave me one of the hardest sales talks that I have ever had or ever heard of in my whole life, about the necessity for a new philosophy that would conserve and pass on to the oncoming generations the sum total of what men like he had learned by a lifetime of trial and error method. And he said it was one of the sins of the ages that this knowledge, gained at such a tremendous price by so many men, was buried with their bones when they died. And nobody had ever organized it into a philosophy and made it available to the man of the streets. Well, I wondered why Mr. Carnegie was wasting his time on a cub reporter like me, giving me a sales talk like that. It was way beyond my capacity at that time. I was curious, and I kept my ears open and my mouth shut. Meanwhile, he told me what this philosophy would do for the man who organized it, what it would do for oncoming generations, how it would benefit people not yet born. And then he said, "Now, I've been talking to you about 3 days about this new philosophy. I've told you all that I know about it, about its possibility.